Welcome to Real Estate Investing Abundance, the show for busy, fulfilled professionals like you to learn how to develop financial independence built on solid, passive real estate investments. Now, here is your host, Dr. Alan Lomax.
Hello, enlightened investors, and welcome back to Real Estate Investing Abundance. I'm your host, Dr. Alan. And as always, we are delighted that you are here with us. Today, we are going to take a look here at distressed market or distressed deals. Are we waiting for a crash or has the crash already arrived? And to take us into our discussion today, we have with us Amy Rubenstein, who is with Clear Investment Group. And Clear Investment Group invest in large distressed multifamily complexes throughout the country. Amy Rubenstein's profile includes multifamily properties, retail, and office, and she specializes in creative structuring and stabilizing, maximizing the financial performance and the revitalization of acquired assets. So, Amy, take us into the show and share a memorable experience that may have helped you to be the person that you are today.
Sure. When I was about 8 or 9 years old, my father took me to the gardening store, and we bought a bunch of different kinds of rose bushes. And he said, every time one of these bushes produces a rose, you can make a spreadsheet and track it. This is like before Excel. So this was some sort of spreadsheet that was like Excel. You'll track which rose bush produced which rose. And when you track those roses, then I'll give you a dollar for every rose that's produced off of these bushes when you present this spreadsheet to me. And so that was sort of my introduction to assets producing different forms of income. And that to me was so exciting because I loved watching the progression of those rose bushes and the buds and the flowers come out and reporting back on the progress. And I think it's kind of similar to what I do now. So I guess that's what sort of parlayed me into that business mindset. That would be my memory.
Yeah, what a creative way for your dad to get you into to tracking and analyzing data at 8 years old. That must be quite a challenge. Because at 8 years old, most of us are just learning to add and subtract.
Sure. Yeah, no, I try to find ways with my own kids of how to get their brains turning like that. They end up walking a lot of distressed properties with me.
Oh, well, that's good. Good involvement as well.
Yes, yes.
Well, Amy, in your portfolio, you have invested in multifamily properties, retail, and office spaces. So how do you balance your investments across these different asset classes, and what factors influence your decision making in each area, because they're very different asset classes?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So I only exclusively now buy C-class multifamily properties. That is all I will buy. Now I own office and retail from the years when I was buying those asset classes. I've been doing this for 20 years. And I've owned a bit of everything, well, not everything, but I've owned a lot of different types of things. And this is our third downturn that I've been in. And what I find really stays the strongest and the steadiest through the ups and the downs is C-class multifamily. It's what I love. It's what I'm best at. It's what I'm passionate about. And so I have stopped buying retail and office altogether.
Well, that brings up two questions. One is, first of all, what was it about retail and office that led you to leave those asset classes and focus specifically on C-class multifamily?
Yeah. So this has been the hardest. I mean, this period from, you know, March of 2020 to now has been a really challenging time for retail and office. Retail has certainly bounced back in a significant way, although it's come back quite different. Office has just not come back. And so owning office is just terribly painful right now. I think it'll come back one day, but it's coming back in a different form. Mm-hmm. The issue I have with retail is, and I'm not saying that you can't make a lot of money investing in retail. So that is certainly not what I'm saying. And I'm sure there are incredible purchases to be made right now in office. So This is not to say that those are not valid asset classes. It's just not where I like to invest. And the reason being, for office, certainly, is if you're buying office right now, you can certainly get phenomenal pricing on office. But it's a very speculative investment. You're waiting for something to come that we don't know about right now, mm-hmm. and that we can't immediately change. So I am quite risk averse. I'm conservative in my investing, and I don't like to speculate about what is to come in the future. I only want to add value on things that I can control. And so if it's about market appreciation or macroeconomics, I tend to avoid it. That's not to say it's not valid. Again, it's just not what I do. So that's sort of the office side of it. On the retail side of it, it's really putting a lot of investment in other people's companies. And certainly there are ways to analyze those risks and buy retail. It's just not what I'm the best at. Mm-hmm. So I'm much better at multifamily. Retail shifted quite a bit because the customer buying has shifted a bit. You know, people aren't using retail in the same ways that they were before. And so it feels like a more volatile market and not something that's really steadied out yet that we really can understand very well.
Yeah, I don't have any retail, but that's certainly is one thing that has always concerned me is that you are totally reliant upon someone else's business acumen, and not just their acumen, but but the retail market has, from my perspective, has always been somewhat volatile. It's not as volatile as the stock market itself, but it's gone through a lot of cycles, really, just since 2008. And who knows where it's going now and more they're competing, of course, with online retailing and a whole different ballgame than what it used to be, for sure. So the other thing that came to mind as you were telling that, you talked about during this downturn. So I guess you are saying that we are in a downturn. When did that downturn come about? And are we at the bottom? Where are we in this cycle?
Yeah, that's a great question and one that I won't be able to answer, but I can tell you.
You don't have a crystal ball.
I can tell you that I believe that we are in a downturn. And the reason I believe that is because pricing is, in what we're buying, pricing is down 25 to 30% from what we were buying 18 months ago. So we believe that means that we're in a downturn. Volume of sales and transactions is quite down. Across the board, I think you see multifamily real estate down about at least 15%, at least. And I think that was directly related to interest rates rising. Very normal response to the rise of interest rates. The thing that I can't tell you is if we're in the beginning or the middle or the end of this downturn. And so that's something that, you know, I can make guesses, and it's a fun game to play in my personal life. I don't make guesses like that in my business life. So when I'm buying in a downturn, I have to analyze a deal expecting to also sell in a downturn. So I want to make sure that I'm never reliant on a change of the marketplace for the better. So all the value that I add is things I can create myself, that our company can create ourselves, things that we, you know, improvements that we can make directly to the assets that's going to improve the asset. So I guess I didn't really answer your question.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of people speculate on where the markets are going. And often, and most times, I think they're wrong because they're just unpredictable. But
It's also really hard to understand. It's hard to predict what the effects of downturns are going to be, or how a new downturn will manifest itself, or you know, there are all of these reactions from the market to the down to the individuals is almost impossible to predict, or certainly way too risky to predict. So, you know, we go day by day expecting that we have no idea what's to come and trying to prep for all possibilities.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many variables. We don't know really which way the interest rates are going to go. We don't really know what interest rates, whichever way they go, is going to have on the job market. We just don't know so many of those things. And the inflation has seemed to stabilize a tad bit. We don't know that is going to continue to hold steady. There's just so many variables out there that are very difficult to predict.
Absolutely. Yeah, if we're just speaking personally, everybody seems to think that interest rates are going to drop over the next year. Generally speaking, what we're hearing is at least 100 basis points over the course of the next year. When I model deals to buy right now, I model for a 25 basis point increase, and I model for it not to go down from there.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that is still speculating, right? That's still speculating that it's not going to go 300 basis points up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have to make those judgments.
Well, and so what we do to prevent from getting hurt by that occurrence, because that could happen too. There is a universe in which that could happen in, right? And so what we do then is we look at what are our unlevered returns. And it's going back to the basics. What is the inherent value of the asset and not the financial and engineering around the financing and the debt that gets put on the asset, and making sure that we fall in love with the deal itself and not fall in love with the debt. So those are the things that we have to keep reminding ourselves as we don't know what's going forth in the future.
Enlightened investors, if you haven't done so already, be sure and click that like button and also click that share so others can take advantage of the content. And finally, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one of our upcoming episodes. Well, Amy, can you share a specific example of a successful creative structuring and stabilization project that you have worked on? You had mentioned that you base your structuring on the value adds that you can do no matter which way the market goes. So if you could share some examples of it.
Sure. So a typical deal, I'll give you an example that we have in our fund right now. So we purchased a project in Shreveport, Louisiana, about 550 units. The project was probably about 80% occupied when we purchased it, but the effective occupancy was probably only about 40%. So half the people weren't paying rent. And that's what we look for. We look for high vacancies, high delinquencies. We look for things that have a lot of managerial distress. And we stabilize those assets and then bring them back to the market. So we came into that project. We have to first identify. So as far as the financing, the creative financing of that was getting a loan that allowed us to put in all of our equity up front. Interest rates were rising when we purchased this. We knew interest rates were going to keep rising, or that's what we, had been hearing. So we put in all of our equity first. Then the lender puts in the lender filled in the pieces. And then the rest of the balance of the loan, we had available to draw on as though you would draw on a line of credit. And so therefore, we were not paying interest on funds that we didn't need yet. And so that was our way of mitigating rising interest rates. that we had a deal that we didn't have to pay all of that interest on up front. It also allows us, it was also a deal that allows us to refinance out of it at any time without penalties, so that when we are stabilized, we have the ability to then refinance and pull out the value of the deal. So that is the financing side. So on the deal side itself, first thing we had to figure out is, why is it that people aren't paying the rent, and why is there a larger vacancy rate than there is in that general neighborhood? So when we look at what should be the vacancy rate, we're looking at the actual neighborhood there. We're saying, all right, occupancy in this submarket is 95%. Why are we at 80, and why are only half of those people paying? We go through every unit. We talk to every tenant to figure it out. So part of this is a lack of management, or lack of attentive management, both to the needs of the tenants themselves, such as maintenance requests, toilets not working, there's a leak in the ceiling, whatever that is. Some of it was the lack of follow through from the management office. So someone didn't pay their rent and nobody went to follow up with them. And some of it was the bigger deferred maintenance. People couldn't drive into the parking lot because there were so many potholes that they were getting flat tires all the time, stuff like that. Those are the easiest kind of fixes, because we budget for that before we purchase. So what is a very difficult fix for the prior owner, because it's $500,000 fix, that's not an easy fix to do if you didn't expect it, is a very easy fix for a buyer coming in who already knows about that problem. So that's the low hanging fruit. Tear up that parking lot, put in a new parking lot. All of a sudden, tenants are seeing that we care. We're going to put money towards this property. We're making an effort. And that helps us both with tenant retention, with tenants paying the rent, and then attracting new tenants to the property, because it actually starts to look nice. So we start to work on the big deferred maintenance things first, so everyone can see that we're going to pull the property into a good place. We clean up the management so that managers are retrained to be attentive to the needs of the tenants. We start to tell people that if we're going to put in this effort towards the property, we need them to put in their efforts as far as paying their rent, keeping the property safe, things like that. And communication starts to improve. So we start to then get people paying their rent. Some people leave because they're not on board with that. New people start to come in because they're seeing the things that we're doing. And we go along this way until we get to market occupancy and market collections. And that's when we've had the deal stabilized. Usually takes us about 12 to 36 months to do this.
Yeah, a lot of work to be done in conjunction with that. I'm curious as to how a property owner could let their property get into a situation like that. Do you know the backstory on that?
Yeah, I would say 90% of the time, the seller has some major distress. Most of that is financial. Most of the time, it's financial. It could be something personal. They got distracted from the project for some reason. Someone in the family got sick. There's a divorce. There's a death. There's something happens that throws the owner off. Whether it's an individual or a company, where they're no longer able to be attentive to the property from a management standpoint and also from a financial standpoint. So it's not usually because people just don't care. There tends to be a reason as to why it starts to happen. And whatever that reason is, eventually it makes its way to financial distress. Because what happens is, less attention or less money starts going into the property. Therefore, people slow down on paying their rent or stop paying their rent. New tenants stop coming in. So the income starts dropping. And then therefore, there's less money to put back into the property. And so the income drops even more. And it's a spiral that moves pretty quickly when someone starts to lose control of their property. And these are pretty big. You can see this on a small scale too, but it seems to happen even faster on a large scale. You just can't cover... You can't cover those deficits for as long on a large property as you can on a small property. And so when people start to feel distress, if you're talking about a 500 unit property, that can come pretty fast where you're bleeding some big dollars.
Well, what are the trends that you are seeing in the multifamily real estate markets? these past few years, and has it changed and has it accelerated really within the last year? So, and how are these affecting your decisions going forward?
So for a while before COVID hit, there was a trend of people wanting more micro spaces, more an emphasis more on common amenities and smaller living quarters. That turned around pretty quickly when COVID hit. People wanted more space to be home. They wanted more of their own individual space. So that's one thing that has changed as a trend. I think people are a little bit more willing to advocate for themselves, a little more vocal on what they want, which I think is a good thing, as long as it can be in productive conversation. A not so good trend is on violence and safety issues in certain cities. We do see more gun violence than we saw prior to COVID. We see more interpersonal tensions between tenants, and we see the police not being able to have as strong an effect on keeping communities safe. And so we have to take a little bit more effort ourselves to keep our community safe, where we used to think that was the job of the police department. And this does vary a little bit submarket by submarket, or I should say a lot, but I do see this in all submarkets, but it's worse in some areas than others. And we see that either police don't feel like they have the ability to step in, or they literally do not have the legal ability to step in anymore because laws have changed, or there's some sort of pullback that makes the property owners more responsible for security than we used to be. We never had budget line items for security. It wasn't something that we had before. So
what are those? More security cameras, more lights, fences,
all of the above. And to the extreme, sometimes we take over properties. So when we do have this distress on these properties, sometimes we have a lot of crime on the properties. So what we look for is, we don't want to have crime in the neighborhood because we can't clean up crime in the neighborhood. But if we have a lot of crime on our building and we are the cause of the crime in the neighborhood, then we'll take on the property. Seems a little counterintuitive to what someone would look for, but we look for the source of the crime to be coming from us. And if the source of the crime is coming from us, then we can solve it. And sometimes if it's bad enough in the beginning, we do have to hire outside security to come in, literally security guards to come in. And we have a project right now in Syracuse, New York. When we took it over, it had terrible amounts of crime in it. And we, before we purchased the property, we sat down with the city and the police department and tenants associations and the attorney general's office. And we said, here's how we can clean up this crime. Here's what we can do to clean up this crime. Does everyone agree that that's a good plan? And does everybody want that to happen? Because what we don't want to do is get into a place where there's an issue like this and have people not agree with what our plan is, and then we're battling everyone, not just the crime, but now we're battling other people on how they think the crime should be solved. So we say, if you have a better way to do this, tell us your way. If that works with us, we agree with that, we can go that way. If we don't agree with it, we'll let you find someone else to buy this property and clean this up, because we're not going to have a battle with tenant associations or tenant attorneys or the attorney general's office or the police department or the code enforcement. We all need to be on the same team with, we have a problem, here's a solution, and everyone agrees that that is a valid solution and will support us through that.
I think that that's probably not an unusual scenario for a lot of C-class distressed properties. They can be very nice communities, but you're looking for distressed communities, and I expect you face that a considerable amount. Unfortunately, we're running out of time here. So, so tell us about Clear Investment Group and just give us a background on that and tell us how we can find you and take advantage of the opportunities that you offer.
Great. So we launched our current fund this last December. We have three portfolios currently in the fund. It's in Shreveport, in Syracuse, and in Columbus, Ohio. We are adding another one or two portfolios to that fund and probably closing that fund in the next quarter. So what we do very specifically is we buy distressed C-class multifamily, minimum size of 300 units and up, and we stabilize those assets, get them to be safe, habitable, functioning, solid communities, and then we put them back on the market and sell them. Our typical hold is somewhere between 2 and 4 years. So now that we've got these three properties, these three portfolios under our belt, we'll start selling these off, I would say, in the next 12 to 18 months, we'll start selling them and then funds go back to investors. So if people, you know, we are open for the next quarter. And if anyone wants information or wants to see our deck or this or that, you can email ir@clearinvestgroup.com. Our website is clearinvestgroup.com. And we're excited about the market right now. We love it. We love buying in this right now. There's incredible deals out there. And it's a fun time to be a part of real estate right now.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for being with us. Very enlightening conversation. So thanks for sharing that with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Enlightened investors, thank you so much for being with us again today. And please take a moment to like, share, and subscribe, and head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating and a review. Until next time, live abundantly, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Enlightened investors, wait, don't go just yet. I just want to remind you about our recently launched webinar that you will not want to miss. If you're at all curious and would like to learn more about how real estate investing can diversify your investment portfolio, alleviate the anxiety associated with Wall Street swings, leverage your 401ks and IRAs to substantially increase the return on your investment, and do all of this with turnkey, hands-off, passive real estate investments, then you'll want to immediately go to steetalker.com/webinar. In the webinar, we'll also address the common dubious investment schemes that you want to avoid. To access the webinar, go to steetalker.com/webinar. I look forward to seeing you in the webinar.
Thank you for tuning in to Real Estate Investing Abundance, brought to you by Steve Talker Capital, a company working for passionate professionals like you to develop financial independence built on solid, passive real estate investments. As part of our efforts to make the world a better place, Steve Talker Capital contributes to activities and organizations committed to better understand the equine. These endeavors attempt to enhance the human treatment of horses worldwide. Steve Talker Capital, working for a world where all creatures, great and small, flourish abundantly. For resources to develop your financial independence, connect with us at stevetalker.com.